we want to have the ability to mathematically describe preparations, transformations, and measurements of quantum systems in their own Hilbert space. We know from the ideal axioms that we can always describe the quantum system by taking into account all the relevant degrees of freedom and modeling them. But that's not practical because there'd be too much information to carry around. So we want essentially an effective description which accounts for ignored degrees of freedom. With respect to the Hilbert space of the system. Okay, so for preparation procedures, we saw two natural settings where which are actually called proper and improper mixtures by the philosophers. No one really uses this terminology anymore. Leading to the following generalization. Any preparation procedure can be described by a density operator rho. So for a system assigned Hilbert space, H, then rho is an element of the, we'll call it DH, where DH is a subset of the linear operators on H, and DH is equal to the set of density operators. And this implies three requirements. Three conditions. One is that rho is non-negative. Two is that it's Hermitian, although I think one implies two. And three is that trace of rho is equal to one, which is just normalization, that's for bookkeeping. So really this is the key condition, non-negativity. Okay, so now we're in a position to actually talk about pure versus mixed states formally. So I've mentioned several times pure states, mixed states. Well, now we can have a very careful distinction about that. So, I'll give you three equivalent definitions of purity. So one is that rho squared equals rho. Two is that trace rho squared is equal to the trace of rho, which we're assuming is 1 by normalization. So here we're assuming and three is that we can write rho as an outer product, or more precisely as a projector, where psi is a vector in the Hilbert space. So that's a rank one projector. Yes?
So when you say rho is greater or equal to 0, does that mean like every component of rho?
So what this means is that that's the definition of a non-negative operator. Almost any time you have some property of an operator, the natural thing is to think about what that means in terms of its action on some vector space. And you see that again here. Because operators operate. So what we care about is that aspect of it. All right, so it might be a little bit surprising that conditions 1 and 2 are equivalent. It looks like condition 2 is much stronger because it's somehow a constraint on all the matrix elements. But condition 2 is really only a constraint on the sum of the diagonals. And it turns out the two are equivalent because of this constraint. If you assume trace rho equals 1, then that restriction on the set of operators allows these two conditions to be equal. All right, so this is an easy way to check. So the easiest one to use in practice, two is the most useful. As a computational check. Or test. For purity. So if I give you some density matrix, some M by M matrix, I promise you that it's a normalized density matrix, which you can check very easily. Then all you do is you calculate, well, you check that it's normalized. By convention, it should be. And then you take trace rho squared and check if trace rho squared is 1. So we have the following condition. If we have a finite dimensional Hilbert space, then the lower bound for trace rho squared is 1 over d, and the upper bound is 1. So this corresponds to a pure state, as I just told you. And then this corresponds to actually a maximally mixed state. Which is the identity matrix on the d-dimensional Hilbert space divided by d. Okay, so this is saturated only by one state, and that's the maximally mixed state, which means I have complete ignorance about what the preparation procedure was. So if someone says, here's a box, it prepares a state, but I'm not telling you anything else about that box, and you want to go ahead and make predictions about how a measurement device will respond to the output of that box, then you would assign this state to the box. Which it turns out, just an interesting fact, you can think of this as a sum over I, AI, AI, for any basis I, for any orthonormal basis. Or, what's really cool, is that the identity on D over D is actually equal to the uniform average over all pure states in the Hilbert space. All psi in CD. And the meaning of this is a bit non-trivial. If we have time next week, I'll come back to measures on states and operators, which is something I have used a lot in my research, and is just a nice thing to know about. This is sometimes called the Haar measure on pure states. That's not quite right. It's actually called the Fubini study measure. The Haar measure is on unitaries. So it's a measure on the space of states. It allows you to integrate over continuous sets of states. Yes?
Shouldn't your sum here over the orthonormal basis projectors have a 1 over D?
It sure should. Thank you. Pardon me?
Isn't it the square root?
The square root would be just for the ket. But you get a square root for the ket and a square root for the dual vector. So you get two square roots. The question or head scratch? That happens to me all the time. All right. So there's a few more things I can tell you about. I want to know. There's a couple of things I could tell you. So here's where I'm going. So first of all, there was a question about the Schmidt decomposition offline, and there was actually a couple of them. So a couple of students wanted some clarity about that. It turns out that the Schmidt decomposition is going to come up naturally in a second, because what I'm going to prove to you is the following. You can ask this question. You can say, look, you showed us that these different scenarios led to density operators as a natural structure to describe our lack of knowledge, two different methods of lack of knowledge, probabilistic mixtures and tracing out some state of a larger system. But then you can ask, now we have this mathematical structure, the set of all density operators. Is that mathematical structure too big? That is, can we realize in the lab any element of that set? And the next question is, if so, how can we realize it? So is it the case that some density operators can be realized physically only as probabilistic mixtures, or some density operators can be realized only by creating some large quantum state across two systems and then ignoring the second system? So it turns out the answer to both those questions is yes, but I don't remember what the question was, so let me say it as an answer. Any quantum state can be realized either as a probabilistic mixture, where you flip a coin and prepare different pure states, and any density operator can be realized via that operational method. Also, any density operator can be realized by taking some pure state. This is called dilating the state. You find some pure state in a bigger Hilbert space, such that when you trace out part of the Hilbert space, you recover that density operator of interest. Now, the second piece is non-trivial. The first piece is trivial. The second piece, you can prove it using the Schmidt decomposition. So we'll revisit that. So let me just state that. I'll state it as a theorem, which I won't prove. So any mathematical object, rho in dH, can be realized operationally, procedurally, based on as a convex combination this is just a probabilistic mixture. Of pure states. And in fact, I think that that's true as a discrete set, but I'm pretty sure that it can be a discrete mixture. But I don't know off the top of my head how to prove that, so I won't commit to that right now. And the second result, which we'll prove, and in fact, there's something called the ambiguity of mixtures. Which is the statement that, in fact, there's an infinite set, a continuous infinity of different convex combinations. So there's not just one way to realize any density operator. There's an infinite number of ways to realize it by taking convex combinations. So for example, an example of that is here, where I showed you that I can think of this identity operator, which is divided by D becomes a density operator. I can think of that as any basis. So there's a continuous set of bases. And this would be a discrete sum over D elements. Or I can think of it as this continuous integral over all pure states. So I'm showing you an infinite set of ways to realize the identity. It turns out that's true for any density operator, any mixed state. So any mixed state admits an infinite, obviously a pure state just has one decomposition in terms of the projector, condition three up there, an infinite number of distinct decompositions into convex decompositions into pure states. So in addition, so we can realize any density operator via this operational procedure if we assume that any pure state can be realized physically, which is an assumption that that can be done. And then the second result is that any density operator which is the mathematical object, can be realized operationally as the reduced state obtained by a partial trace of a pure state in a larger Hilbert space. Questions about that significance of that? I'm about to prove this.
approved. Start over here.
So, recall the Schmidt decomposition. So for any psi in AJ tensor HB, there exists a set of coefficients, of non-negative coefficients, called Schmidt coefficients. Some people call them Schmidt values, Schmidt numbers. Okay, they go by a few names. And there exists a pair of bases, AI and BI, they're called, which are orthonormal bases for HA and HB. These are called Schmidt bases. Such that psi can be written as a sum over I lambda I AI tensor BI. And obviously, as was asked last class, these are upper bounded. The number of such elements is upper bounded by the lower of the two dimensions of the Hilbert space, because that's when we exhaust our orthonormal bases. So suppose we have some density operator. By the way, sorry, were there any questions about this? Yeah.
So are they definitely bases for AJ and HB, or just together they form a basis for AJB? Because if they have a different number of dimensions, then how?
Yeah. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. I guess that. I guess that they would be an orthonormal basis for some subspace of the two spaces.
Okay.
So that's probably the correct way to say it. Let me just insert that caveat for some subspaces of. Thank you. So suppose we have a density operator rho, and we'll just write some parameterization of it as some convex mixture, some convex combination of pure states. So the PIs as physicists, we often take for granted that the symbol kind of carries meaning. It's a P, so we think of probability. But it's good to be careful about this kind of thing. That's what mathematicians are good at. So suppose we have a density operator, and we know any density operator can be expressed as a convex combination. So we know that that's always going to be true based on the first theorem. Then what we can do is we can construct a state psi in HA cross HB such that it has the Schmidt decomposition square root of PI AI tensor BI. So the square roots of probabilities are still non-negative. They won't sum to one. Square roots don't sum to one, but remember the condition on the Schmidt basis, which I did not write here, was that the sum over I lambda I squared is equal to one. So that's exactly correct. So we've made the correct mapping between PI and lambda I. And then what we can do is then we can just compute, we can compute the reduced state via the partial trace, which I'll do for you because I think many of you haven't become super familiar with the reduced state. So we construct a state rho as the trace over system B of this Schmidt state. And what we're going to get is a sum over I. So when you evaluate the partial trace, you can choose any basis you want. So let's choose this basis. And of course, if there are, like you pointed out, BI might not be a spanning, might not, it's an orthonormal set. It may not span the full Hilbert space HB. It might just span some subspace of HB. In that case, we're summing over the full basis, but elements of the full basis that exceed this limit would just produce zero, because they'd be orthogonal to the subspace that's spanned by the Schmidt basis. Okay? Everyone comfortable with that? Was that too fast? No? Okay, good. So we sum over all I. So here, let's put it this way. This might sum only to sum k, which is less than the dimension, less than or equal to the dimension of HB. But this we're going to sum over all the way over the full dimension of HB. And so for elements where I goes beyond k, we're going to get a zero contribution, because it'll be orthogonal. And so then we insert our sum over, yeah, let me call this J. Okay, then we have a sum over I, square root of pi, ai, bi. I've dropped the tensor product because I don't want to carry it around. Now I need another sum for the ket, or the dual vector. Let's call that L, square root of PL, AL, BL. And then now we bring for the trace, we sum over a basis, so I need my other basis set here. And then now you can see how this is going to work. This guy is going to come over here and form an inner product with this guy. And these two are right away giving us delta LJ. And this is going to give us delta IJ. Okay, so then rho obtained by this partial trace, I is going to equal J, L is going to equal J, so we'll just call it J. So we're going to have a sum over J. We get a contribution, I is J, L is J. We get PJ, and then we get left over with AJ, AJ. And I guess I must assume here that, wait a minute, how do I get that AJs are the same as the size? Okay, I guess we can always choose. We can just choose where we choose. So when we construct this decomposition here, what we did is we chose the AIs to be equal to the psi i's. So we can construct any Schmidt state we want, right? We're free to, when we're constructing a state, we can construct whatever state we want. So we're just choosing a state of this form where AI is equal to psi I, and where the lambda coefficients are equal to square root of pi. So that was our choice by construction. And then we see that this particular state, when you calculate the partial trace, gives us exactly the state we want to have on the reduced Hilbert space. Okay, so I think, well, I'll take questions now, but this is a proof that given any density operator, I can always find you a state in a bigger Hilbert space that when I trace out the rest of the Hilbert space, I'm left with exactly that density operator on the system of interest. So that means that I can physically, if the axioms of quantum mechanics can be realized, the fundamental axioms, what I consider to be the fundamental axioms, the ideal axioms, if any pure state can be realized in the lab, then that means any density matrix can be realized in the lab by either of these two methods. So that's what I wanted to show to you. Actually, I think I'm going to add your comment to my notes because that's a good point. And I just, yes.
Sorry, are the psi-i's orthonormal?
Are these orthonormal?
Yeah, early, yeah.
Yeah, so I've assumed they're orthonormal here.
Okay.
Because I did say that. Because I said that we can always realize, I just said it for the identity. When I claimed that you can always realize it as a convex combination, which I didn't prove, it turns out that these can be an orthonormal basis. And that actually just follows from diagonalization. Like the fact that the density operator is a non-negative operator implies that it can be diagonalized and that it will have real, in fact, non-negative eigenvalues. So if you think about, take a density operator rho, which is some non-negative linear operator. Mathematically, what do? I diagonalize it. When I diagonalize it, I get a set of eigenvalues and eigenvectors that are orthonormal. So the very fact, so the proof of this is essentially trivial. The fact that I can diagonalize this object means that I can generate a sum of the form, let me call it CI, CI. So diagonalization guarantees the structure of this form. The fact that rho, so if for any normal operator, we can get a spectral decomposition, which is a diagonalization. Because rho is non-negative, and that guarantees that these are orthonormal. So Ci, Cj is equal to delta ij. And then the fact that it's non-negative means these coefficients are going to be non-negative. And the fact that it's normalized means these coefficients are going to sum to 1. Now you don't look convinced.
Oh. No, it's fine. I think I just don't understand the theorem.
Okay, so what I'm claiming here is that we can always find some convex combination over a basis.
The second one, actually.
This one.
So I thought you were saying that for any like arbitrary density operator.
Yes. So this is any density operator can be realized as the partial trace of a pure state. So step one of the proof is make use of this fact, which follows here. I've just proven it. So I've proven that once I have a density, you tell me what density operator you're interested in. I diagonalize it. And then that means I am given, by diagonalization, I get this form for the density operator you gave me. Now is that?
That's fine.
You got it. Okay, good. So then once we have that, then the rest follows. Yes?
But the density operator that I give you doesn't necessarily have to be diagonal on the Schmidt basis, right?
No, it does not. So what's going on here is that you give me the density operator, I diagonalize it.
Right.
Now I just construct a state. I say, let me build this state in a bigger Hilbert space. I take two orthonormal bases.
Yeah.
The first basis, so I'm just building a state now. You gave me a state, and I'm saying, let me build this state, this pure state. I build the pure state where I choose the orthonormal basis in this decomposition to be what I got from diagonalization.
But you're not free to do that.
I am.
The Schmidt basis is special, isn't it? You can't just take any basis and...
It ends up being the Schmidt basis. So I guess maybe I think it ends up being the Schmidt basis, or a Schmidt basis.
So if you choose a basis for A, can you always choose a special basis for B so that together they form a Schmidt basis?
It depends on the constraints. So I can always write down, let me be careful here. I can always choose some set, some orthonormal set of operators, phi I, which are orthonormal, and they span some subspace of HA. So I can always do that, right? Now I can always, similarly, I can always choose another basis. Let me call it, I can always, so I'm choosing here a basis eta k, which again, eta k prime, delta kk prime, which again spans some subspace of HB. And then I can construct some state psi in HAB, where I just choose to construct it as a sum over I square root of pi phi I tensor a to I. So this is a dummy index. So I'm just constructing this pure state in HAB. Now what I'm claiming is that this pure state, which I've constructed, will be the Schmidt decomposition for some density operator in HA. And in fact, and then if I choose, so given some density operator rho of the form sum over I square root of pi, well here I should have chosen something different here. Let me just call this lambda I. So I just built that. And then I say, now you give me some rho, which is some psi I, well, I shouldn't call it psi, AI tensor BI. Then because I chose this basis and I chose this basis and I chose these coefficients, I just choose them to be the elements that match with whatever decomposition I had from the spectral decomposition of the density operator.
Wait. So, you can't just pick any fine eta and have them span any state in psi.
No. Psi is the state I get by choosing phi and eta. And then psi happens to be a Schmidt decomposition for this density operator if, when I choose phi I, I choose the ais, and when I choose the eta k's, I choose the bi's. Let me put that on hold a second, because there's some other questions. Maybe someone can give a better answer than me. Yeah.
How is the boxed rho a reduced density operator if the psi still is the direct product of A and B bases? Like, if it's still the psi that we defined over there.
Did I use a bad notation? This psi is in HA. Oh, that's what's confusing. I see. This psi is in HAB. I see what's confusing here. I should have called this chi. So this is chi. This is a vector in this bigger Hilbert space. And then psi with a subscript was not this psi. This is just a different set of objects. I should have called this, should have just called this AI to start. And then here we would have, this is the original, this is now chi. I'm sorry, I picked a bad notation. And then this is now just AJ again. And this is... Does that make more sense now? I confused the heck out of you guys. My apologies. Yeah.
I don't understand why you're talking about Schmidt decomposition and problem, because you don't really use a Schmidt decomposition for anything, right?
Well, the end of it is that this ends up being the Schmidt decomposition for that density operator. So I'm trying to show you that any density operator can be realized as a pure state, and I'm just showing that, well, the Schmidt decomposition is such a pure state. So it's essentially a trivial point. I mean, if you believe the Schmidt decomposition, then I didn't need to prove this to you. Right?
I don't see, that's not even a density operator, right? That's a state in Hilbert space.
Oh, shoot. Oh, my gosh. And this is, what did I do here? Oh, this is, sorry, what, I didn't.
Yeah, the side there too, we change that to AI.
Sorry, given rho, this was supposed to be this.
Oh, yeah.
That's right, no.
Yeah, then you could.
Did you have a comment? Okay, well, it sounds like if you guys are all in consensus against me, then it must have been confusing. So, sure, I mean, I guess the point was, I knew students were wondering what the Schmidt decomposition was, so I thought I'd repeat it. But wait, you do agree with me that the state we construct, the reduced state of which is that density operator, is the Schmidt decomposition. So no one disagrees with that. Yeah.
Sorry. I think if you're asked, I didn't catch the answer. Can you use any basis of HA to construct the Schmidt decomposition?
Given some density operator? So you have to tell me what the constraints are. So the Schmidt decomposition for some density operator. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, hold on a second. The Schmidt decomposition for some pure state in the bigger Hilbert space. Sorry, the Schmidt decomposition, okay, here's what's mixed up. The Schmidt decomposition says, I start with some arbitrary state in the Hilbert space, and I want to write it in this special form, the Schmidt form. So it's a way of taking as input a pure state of HAB and writing as output a pure state in this canonical form. So then, what is your question?
Does the choice of your basis for HA matter? Like, can you choose any basis of HA?
No, it does matter. So given the pure state, if I just give you a generic pure state in a bipartite Hilbert space, then you have to calculate what the Schmidt basis is for that. And it's also non-unique. The Schmidt bases are non-unique, actually, which I didn't mention.
They're non-unique, but they're not unique.
But they're not totally arbitrary.
Okay.
Yeah.
So any two different states might have different Schmidt bases. Might have different bases.
Yes. All right, so I should have mentioned the non-unique. Let me make a note to make this clearer. I think that was confusing enough. We'll just move on from there. Yeah, sure. So I think when I was saying Schmidt decomposition, all I meant was the Schmidt form.
But, okay, so I give you a row and you need to diagonalize it?
Yeah.
You're free to choose the basis that will work for the Schmidt decomposition.
This is the trace.
So like you could diagonalize that row in a basis that would work for the Schmidt decomposition, but you could also choose to diagonalize it in the basis that would work for the Schmidt decomposition.
Yeah.
And then
you're going to always write that row.
Repeat that question, please.
So I hand you a row and you need to diagonalize it, and you think to yourself, well, I want to use the Schmidt decomposition, so I'll use a basis that.
Well, okay, just, okay. Okay, fine, I agree. Just forget the Schmidt decomposition. The point is, no. The point is, you construct a state of this form, which happens to be the Schmidt form. So, what's the Schmidt form? So the Schmidt form is in general, you have a state. So in general, let me not even call that A. Let me not call it A and B. Let me call it alpha and beta. The Schmidt form of a state is sum over just a single index, okay, of lambda j, aj, tensor bj. Okay, so notice that in the general decomposition of a state, we have indices that can go from two indices going from 1 to d, which means we have d squared terms. The Schmidt form is a special choice of bases where you just have up to d terms, and there's only the one index. So here you can have alpha 1 goes with beta 1, alpha 1 goes with beta 2. Here you just have a 1 goes with b 1, a 2 goes with b 2. So this is a special form of a state, which is like a Schmidt form of the state. And so when we constructed the purification of the density operator, we constructed a state in the Schmidt form, and we weren't using a Schmidt decomposition of some other pure state. It was just the Schmidt form, which is, I guess, the words I should have used.
But when you diagonalized the density matrix I gave you, you had to use your basis that you were going to use for the Schmidt.
Yeah, when I construct the Schmidt form, I have to use the same basis that I used here.
No, but it's going to be the other way around, because the Schmidt form requires a certain basis that you should.
Sorry, this is given the particular state chi, so I suppose you are free to choose whatever chi you want, such that you can choose such a basis.
Yeah, chi is the freedom. All right, maybe we should follow up after class. I think there's some clarity if you put the words together in a particular order, and sorry for that. It's not complicated, so a moment of reflection should be fine to make sense of all that. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was generalized measurement. So this is very elementary, that we can construct in effect, I'm even going to skip this. So trivially, we can construct a measurement via mixtures of projector valued measures. All right, I'll just give it. I'll explain it.
If it doesn't say anything, I would be happy to.
Okay. So you can imagine some observable A, which has spectral decomposition, and some observable B, where here, of course, these are orthogonal projectors. These are trace orthonormal. Let me just write it this way. And then similarly, the PI and PJ are projectors. So we have two different ideal measurements with different projectors on the different subspaces of the Hilbert space. So while the individual projectors within A are orthogonal, the projectors from B may not be orthogonal to the projectors of A. then we have a device. It measures A with probability PA and measures B with probability PB. So how do we describe that measurement device? Well, we can define an operator E sub K, which let's let this index go from 1 to IA, and this goes from 1 to IB. That's not going to be a good notation. Let me change this index to K. This will be capital K. This will be capital I. So then we can, oh, this is K now, geez. All right, then we'll call this M. So EM is going to be equal to PA. PA pi I for M equal to 1 to I, and then we're going to define EM is going to be equal to E I plus L is going to be equal to PB PL. This doesn't even make sense. There. All right. So for the first I elements of this set of objects E is going to be just the projectors from 1 to I of the measurement A, rescaled by this probability. And then, so then we have a full set here. Where M goes from 1 to I plus K. And then for the second set, we already defined the first I of them, so now we start with index L. So here L goes from 1 all the way up to K. So now for I plus 1 to I plus K, we define these operators as the projectors of measurement 2, measurement B, weighted by the probability of B. So here we'll just assume that PA plus PB is equal to 1. So then it turns out then for any preparation row, we have that the probability of some outcome M is equal to the trace of EM row. So where, in other words, if the index M is in the first set, then that corresponds to having measured A. And if the index is in the second set, that corresponds to having measured B. And we can collectively describe this full set of, here the idea is you know which measurement was performed. So here the idea is you know which measurement was performed to interpret the results. So we just have this generalized structure to describe both of those settings. So this is just a bookkeeping method to keep track of the fact that there were two different possible measurements that could have been performed. So think of it, then this set of objects, the set EM of outcomes, the set of so these are operators assigned to outcomes. So here M is the outcome of a pointer, and E is the operator assigned to that outcome. So this set of objects satisfies two conditions. One, each EM is non-negative, and two, what is two? Oh, the sum over M of EM is equal to identity. So you see that from the fact that we know that the sum over all the projectors is equal to identity. And then this sum is weighted by this probability, and the second sum is weighted by the other probability, and those two probabilities sum to one, so we get this structure. So this is the structure we can use to describe in one unified notation these two different possible measurements. The more interesting scenario is where you have your system of interest is entangled with some ancilla, and you want to describe, then you do a projective measurement on the system and ancilla together, but you want to describe that as an effective measurement in a smaller Hilbert space. So this is case one, and then case two for generalized measurements is a measurement, ideal measurement on a composite system. So in this case, we again assume we have some bipartite Hilbert space. And and then we have some state rho, which is equal to rho A tensor B. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a joint measurement of both systems. We're going to do a measurement, what do I call it here? We do some measurement of A equal to a sum over I, AI, PI. This is our observable. Where this is a linear operator on HA tensor HB. So now the point is, what we can do is we can always describe the probability of outcome I given the preparation rho is equal to the trace of PI rho A tensor rho B. But remember our goal. Our goal is we want some effective description of this operation just in the Hilbert space HA. So it turns out we can do this if we say the probability of I is equal to the trace of EI rho A, where EI is equal to the partial trace over system B of PI times identity on A tensor rho B. So notice now that the measurement operator representing our action on system A, our measurement action on system A, depends on the input state on system B. So in a sense, system B is controlling what we're actually measuring when we do this. And that reflects the fact that the information is sensitive to both the state A and the state B. So the outcome you're going to get is going to depend on what the state of B was. So here the outcome depends on rho B, or the probability of the outcome, I should say. The probability of each outcome depends on the input state. So the way you make this construction, so I can show you how this works, you just say, well, look, well, the probability of I given rho is equal to this expression here, which I'll just expand out exactly by choosing a basis. And so what I'm going to get is I'm going to get a sum over ij, I can't call it I, nu j, well, that's going to be confusing, m, okay, ij, kl, mn, let's call it m, mj, and the sum over kl, the matrix elements of PI are M, K, comma, JL. And then we get the matrix elements of rho A, which are going to be JM. And the matrix elements of rho B, which are going to be LK. All I've done is just chosen a basis to evaluate the trace. And then these are the matrix elements of these objects in that basis where I've taken into account the trace. Okay, so the trace sets the leftmost indices to the same as the rightmost indices. Then you have to insert a complete set of states in here. And so that's where all the indices come from. So is that just straightforward? You should be able to do that in 10 seconds. So for example, let me just clarify it further. PI MKJL is equal to M tensor K PI J tensor L. And same for rho A and rho B. So then we just define the matrix E, EI, MJ is equal to sum over KL PI MKJL rho B LK. So this is a definition. And then you recover that the probability of I is equal to the trace of EI times rho A. Probability of I, given rho, this is the conditional probability you always want to keep track of. So the probability of I conditioned on the input being rho, which is a state across both systems, depends on, of course, the input state that you're measuring. And the measurement operator depends on the input state to the other system. And then we remark that in this case, this set of objects, EI, satisfies two properties. One is that each EI is a non-negative operator. And two, the sum over all I, EI, is equal to the identity. And you can just check this directly based on the definition. So in fact, these two conditions define a POVM. So we have something called a POVM, which stands for positive operator valued measure, which most people don't even know. They just say POVM. So a POVM is this general construct for describing these more involved measurement scenarios. So in fact, we've now identified the full structure. So it turns out that we have, so a POVM is any set of operators. And here I'll just give you the discrete case because it's easier. There's a slightly more general definition where we allow continuous outcomes, and I'll get to that later. Satisfying one, that each EI is non-negative, and two, the sum over I, EI, is equal to identity. So this defines a general measurement structure, and in fact, then we can elevate postulate two for generalized measurement. And it's that any measurement procedure can be described by a POVM such that the probability of getting output K given some input state rho is equal to the trace of EK rho, where the point of this is that we're doing everything in the Hilbert space of the system of interest. So we have rho is an element of H rho is an element of the density operators on H, where H is the system Hilbert space. So H is not A tensor B anymore. H is just the system. We call it HS. And then E K is some non-negative operator, which we'll just call it a linear operator on HS,
where HS is the Hilbert space of the system of interest.
So it's the reduced Hilbert space. So this is our box. So we can completely describe the statistics of the output in terms of this mathematical structure, the POVM. Yes?
Don't you still have to know all about the B space, though, to calculate your EON?
Yeah. Yes, you do. So there's a difference here between, remember this idea that when we say the simplest postulate, postulate one, we can assign a vector in Hilbert space to a preparation procedure. Which vector do you assign? You have to figure that out. You have to know about the physics of the problem. Fundamental laws, engineered laws, all that stuff. Similarly, which POVM do we assign for this particular box? Well, to know which POVM to assign, there's two ways to do it. One is to systematically explore it by using known input states. This is a linear operator, so we actually can characterize it by just testing its action on a complete set of states. Or you can predict it rather than determine it tomographically. You can predict it by saying, well, I know what's going on in this side of this box. There's a state rho b, and there's this coupling between the two systems leading to this projective measurement on both systems. And then you can deduce what E is based on side information. Well, I'll describe later in class how you directly experimentally test what matrix you should use for each EK. But yeah, so you do, in a sense, in order to be predictive, you need to know what's going on inside the box. So now we're in a position to start talking about what's going inside the box. So starting next class, I'll be able to go into the whole theory of measurement and look at how we model measurements where the pointer is itself a quantum system, and we look at how we couple the systems and how we make sure we know what this output is. We'll revisit Luder's rule and get a better sense of, you know, when is something a measurement and when is it not a measurement and what does that mean? And we'll explore all that stuff, which is usually a lot of fun. That'll be a good thing to do on a Friday. All right. Thanks for all your questions, and I'll see you tomorrow.